Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Keep your family safe with help from Menards. From smoke and carbon monoxide detectors to fire extinguishers and more, Kidde Home Safety products keep your family protected in case of emergencies. Kidde detectors feature enhanced sensing technology that reduces false alarms and give fast alerts for more time to get out safely. Check out all our Kidde safety products and check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Hey guys, I'm Caleb Giddings, and you're watching a new episode of Gun Day Brunch, brought to you by Guns.com and Taurus USA. If you're looking on information about reliable, affordable firearms for the law-abiding citizen, go ahead and go to TaurusUSA.com. And if you want to purchase one of those guns, you can hit the link right there on the website to take you to Guns.com, order your firearm, and have it shipped directly to your FFL dealer. I want to welcome you guys back to part two of the interview between Melody Lauer and Chris Seipert. If you don't know what's going on, go ahead and go back last week to last week's episode, and you'll get a little bit of background on Chris Seipert, a retired Green Beret, and why you should care about his opinions. Pro tip, you should. As well as some information on Melody Lauer and why you should care about her opinions. Pro tip, you should. All right, guys, that is it for me. I'll be back next week along with the rest of the crew. But for now, I want you to sit back, relax, and enjoy part two of Melody and Chris's conversation.
What would you say distinguishes? We kind of got into this a little bit already, but what would you say distinguishes good force on force from bad or even mediocre force on force?
Sure. So right up front, something that I want to address very, very emphatically, and very rarely will you hear me get emphatic. I tend to be, there's, you know, my way is a way, it's not the way. I've had some wonderful mentors that have taught me some great stuff, both in special operations and, you know, the open enrollment private sector. I don't have the answer. I have a answer, and somebody else's slightly different answer, maybe equally or even more valid. But one area where I am non-negotiable is on the aspects of safety. In force on force scenarios, we are, you know, we're pointing airsoft guns at each other, but they look and feel like real guns. And, you know, likewise, we're pointing inert pepper spray canisters that spray water at each other, but they look and feel very much like real pepper spray. And every year in America, and between police training and open enrollment force on force training, there will be a handful of students injured or killed where safety protocols, industry standards were not followed. Somebody, you know, one of the role players went to lunch, came back, did not get patted down and double and triple checked to remove his, you know, lunch gun from him. And then he pulls it out in a scenario and shoots somebody. And people think, well, how could that happen? It happens every year in America. So the biggest thing is if you attend somebody else's force on force training and y'all don't have a sterilization period where like you're patting yourself down and making sure you have no knives, knives, guns, pepper spray, ninja stars, bazookas, nunchucks, anything like that on you. And then one of your classmates is patting you down. And then you go over and have an instructor pat you down. And then maybe have another instructor pat you down. And then like everybody's goodies are in a bag that's been put off in an area where like, if you go over there, when you come back, you have to get patted down again. And if you go to a class where it doesn't seem borderline ridiculous, the measures they take to ensure that real weapons aren't introduced into the scenario, if it doesn't seem borderline ridiculous, you should probably leave because it's probably not safe and eventually a mistake may happen. So that's a big one. That's my one of my big soapboxes, but that can't happen. And then beyond that, I think a big thing is one, realistic scenarios. And we all know, you know, we all scroll on our phones, we all see, you know, we're on our community pages and we know about the robbery that happened down over here, the carjacking that happened at the mall, you know, in the town near us. Realistic scenarios because, you know, putting you in a, for example, now this is, I don't do home, for example, and I'll use this because I don't do home-based scenarios. you know, Melody, I know you've been told that your shotgun, the internet's told you that your shotgun doesn't have enough capacity and it's going to be overrun while you're reloading in a home defense scenario. Yeah, if I put you in a home defense scenario and then I have 20 role players and you just keep stacking them up and the 13th role player is climbing over the first 12, I guess not super realistic, right? Unless you're engaged in cartel warfare, you know, that's not a thing that's going to happen. So generally speaking, scenarios that are plausible, realistic, reasonable scenarios. And you can have one or two that are kind of fun just to test certain aspects of decision making. But if every scenario is just wild and far fetched, that's generally pretty poor. The other one, and this is kind of a poor to mediocre, is something that I've experienced in both my military and civilian training career that I try to avoid, is there in the scenarios that I've created, there's not one magic answer. Because in life, there's typically not one magic answer. There's usually multiple suitable answers to a problem of varying degrees of correctness. Like, you know, and I could list all of them out and like, okay, this would probably be most ideal with the least downsides. This would probably still work, but you know, that you got to worry about this and so on and so forth. Now, there may be some definitely wrong answers, you know, like, yeah, first degree murder, if somebody comes up to ask you for directions and you shoot them in the face. Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and say you probably made the wrong choice. But by and large, I try to create scenarios where people have multiple different pathways to success, because in real life, you typically have multiple different pathways to success, to either get out of the scenario or to use just enough force to stop the assault, you know, however it might work out. Whereas some of the lesser force on force stuff that I've been to, there was some magic words or magic phrase or magic action that, like, if you did anything other than this one specific thing, you died. Or you failed or whatever. And that's not how real life works.
So this is something that if you've taken any classes with Craig Douglas always asks this class at the end of, or at the beginning rather, of his, particularly his ECQCs, which is, why aren't there more classes like this out there?
So I think, and again, Craig, I'm glad you mentioned Craig. Yeah, Craig is a mentor, and I would hope I'd call him a friend. He's a really good dude and the godfather of open enrollment force on force training. Somebody I trust implicitly, well, explicitly. So I think there's a number of roadblocks to it. I think that the number of trainers out there who have a lot of experience with it, because this, like, you know, from the NRA to various different shooting organizations, if somebody's just like, hey, I want to become a handgun instructor, there are a million pathways to, like, take the basic class, then take the instructor class, and like, hey, here's how you run a range, here's how you teach somebody to shoot. Like, okay, cool, got it. There is no such thing that exists within force on force. Typically, the organizations that are doing a lot of force on force are law enforcement and military, but law enforcement and military have radically different missions than we do. And honestly, there's a ton of bad force on force scenario training in the military and in law enforcement as well. And if you ask any cop or soldier, they'll tell you they've been part of some of it. So one, I think there's a much more limited number of people who have experience with scenario based training, who think, hey, maybe I could offer this. I think that also a lot of what does exist is of the, like, all right, me and my three buddies are going to have plate carriers and helmets and AR-15, you know, airsoft AR-15s clearing a building, which is fun. It doesn't help you when you're getting carjacked at the gas pump on a road trip. And so I think a lot of the force on force training that does exist is tactical fantasy camp stuff rather than realistic scenarios. And frankly, I think it's people, the average person out there who's an insurance salesman from Des Moines, Iowa, like, doesn't know it exists, doesn't know they need it, doesn't understand how it can help them. And frankly, I think bang for your buck, you must have a minimum baseline of technical shooting skill to, like, carry a handgun in public responsibly. However, I think that, like, bang for your buck, quality force on force training can really, like, help you figure out, like, where you need to be spending your time going forward from a training and budget perspective.
Well, and that speaks to that you just mentioned, the insurance salesman from Des Moines, Iowa. You know, they don't know what's out there. They don't know. And you kind of mentioned it a little bit about, you know, where to put your training dollars. But other than that, why should anybody go to Force on Force?
So John Hearn, who's, you know, friend and colleague of you and I, he does this, he's got this lecture that's like, who wins, who loses, and why. And he has this fantastic diagram. And it's basically like a seesaw teeter totter, and I'm paraphrasing it here, but it's funny because Americans, we're gadget people, we're gadget solution people, right? I have a problem, I want to buy a gadget, order it on Amazon, it'll be here tomorrow or the next day, and that solves my problem. That's just who we are and how we operate. And so you'll hear people who are like, oh, I bought a gun, you know, and they say I bought protection. Like, well, no, you brought a tool that can use correctly provide protection, but like it's not a talisman, right?
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Like, people can get lucky, but within the holistic of all these self-protection problems you can encounter, you know, if I put you into a life simulation and had you have 100 interactions with people that are contested, how many of those out of 100 are going to require shooting at all? Well, probably, frankly, not most of them.
Yeah.
You know, we get into arguments and disagreements with people all the time and don't end up having needing a gun. Now, when you need a gun, only a gun will do, or only a lethal tool would do, and a gun is a pretty good one. But at the end of the day, the ability to, like, draw a gun and shoot it at somebody at conversational distance is only one tiny thin slice of the entire self-defense problem. You know, how do we avoid trouble? How do we deter trouble through our body language, posture, gait? You know, or how we make eye contact with people, how we verbally interact with one another, recognition. How do we recognize when there's trouble on the horizon? Because again, I'd rather recognize 10 seconds in advance that I'm about to be in a fight than no seconds in advance. And if I can recognize far enough in advance, I can just nope right back into my car and drive away. And so everybody's shooting is fun. Shooting's tons of fun. I love to shoot. And certainly, like I said, you need a baseline level of skill. But beyond that, the technical aspect of training is how to shoot that gun quickly and accurately, how to deploy that pepper spray, how to karate chop somebody, you know, or, you know, grapple with them, whatever. The tactical aspect, and people overuse the word tactical, but at the end of the day, it's what technique to employ and when to employ it. Okay. Do I need to access a tool, or do I just need to ask somebody to hold up right there? Like, what do I need to do in this moment to where I'm not using too much force, I'm not using too little force, I'm neither overreacting nor underreacting? And the first portion of my class kind of deep dives on the timing. When do I do what? What should I be looking for? What do I need to be worried about? And then the scenarios are an opportunity for you to practice all that and be like, oh yeah, I probably should have done XYZ earlier, or yeah, it probably wasn't time to do ABC yet. Because frankly, I think the biggest thing people take away from these force on force classes than any good force on force class, you know, I'm proud of mine, but you know, Craig's ECQC, is people come away from those and they're like, oh, like, yeah, I'd walked around with this thought in my mind that if X happened, I would do Y. But frankly, if I did that, I might end up in prison. Or, well, I'll just do this. And like, yeah, that actually probably would get me killed because I just tried to do it against another person who was actually trying to beat me and it didn't work. And so force on force, I don't think you got to do, you don't have to make it a second job or anything like that. But I think literally just exposing yourself to it, getting into a scenario or two, watching some other people go through scenarios, will open your eyes to like how complex human interactions with people who might or might not mean you harm can be. And like, it's cool to have a fast trigger finger, but there's a whole lot more to it than that.
So, and this is something that I was just thinking about how particularly, and I've noticed it mostly since like 2020, the COVID era, maybe a little bit before then, the extreme sort of self-segregation that has been happening of people really not wanting to interact with people anymore. You know, like you said, that we want everything to be delivered to our home. We don't want to have to deal with people. Conflict resolution and even just interpersonal skills is something that is, I'm noticing it's harder and harder to get like my children and even people just a little bit younger than me to even interact with one another, much less interact with them when there's any kind of conflict. We are the ghosting generation. You know, we would rather just leave than ever even tell someone, hey, I'm sorry, I'm not interested. I'm assuming you've taught force on force for a while. Are you seeing a trend towards these kinds of, interactions being more difficult, or has there been any kind of trends? What have you seen as an instructor of force on force with interpersonal skills society wise?
So, and prior to, without going too in depth into it, so prior to my retirement and teaching this force on force class, another force on force type block, I taught another in the military. I taught a scenario based course that was also focused very much on social fluency with specific objectives in mind, of like you're trying to accomplish certain things, but part of it's through verbal engagement, social interaction, and that kind of thing. And not just pre-COVID, but like, frankly, I'm talking to you, I'm looking at my iPhone as we film this, and people tend to, performance deteriorates under stress, right? Just in general, that if I asked you to, make dinner, you make dinner all the time. But if you had to make dinner while I was occasionally throwing darts into the kitchen, that might or might not hit you, you might get some measurements wrong as you were making the thought or whatever. And so likewise, the level of digital engagement that we have, we only have 24 hours in a day, that reduces our face-to-face social interaction with other people. It just does. Young people are spending less time going and hanging out in public places where members of the opposite sex or the same sex hang out. And then walking up saying, hi, I'm Chris, if you want to dance, and more time just swiping on an app. And so the problem is that if you do it generationally, and even adults who just don't practice social interaction as much, if all of a sudden you're placed in a stressful situation or a quickly moving situation where you have to think quickly and act quickly to keep things from getting worse or whatever, your social skills are going to deteriorate. And next thing you know, you've said something foolish that pissed the other person off. And now you've taken what would have been a tense interaction, and now the dude wants to fight you or gal or whatever. And so, I think that one of the important things, we talk about this at length in managing unknown contacts portion of the course in MUC, where we teach, we have each person develop kind of their own bespoke custom phrasing for different easily predictable situations. You spend enough time in public, you're going to find yourself in this situation, this situation, this situation. And when you encounter them, we want some phrases to be practiced, relaxed, and confident, and right on the tip of your tongue, where you don't have to like search for the right words if this happens. You can literally just, I thought about this, I have a pre-planned response, and we pull it off the shelf, dust it off, and deliver it, and it's relaxed, authentic, and confident, and it makes the other person think, okay, cool, I'm going to calm down, or, no, that person's not acting like food, I'm going to go select another target, or whatever it may be. And so, our social skills as a society are deteriorating, and then when you introduce social friction and stress, people tend to perform even more poorly. And so practicing very specific self-preservation social interaction on a semi-regular basis is super beneficial, so that when you're at the gas pump and you encounter a tense situation that, we all encounter every once in a while, you can just kind of immediately bust out the right answer instead of throwing the wrong one out there and putting yourself in a bad spot.
Is there anything that people can do on their own to help them with this? Or is this something you can only get in force-on-force or scenario-based training?
So I'm going to give you a broad answer, and I'll give you a specific answer. Broadly speaking, something that everybody that takes a private handgun lesson with me is going to hear in that first hour, a recommendation that has nothing to do with pistol shooting. And I'm going to tell them to read the book, How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie. And it's a very old book. It's a very, it's one of the best-selling books besides the Bible, like, you know, in American history, that frankly, I like making up statistics. So we're going to say, I've made up totally non-scientific number, you know, 70% of all violent interactions in public with strangers is avoidable ego-related stuff. You cut me off, yell at me, I yell back at you, next thing you know, we're fighting, you know, and our kids are sitting in the car looking out the windows at these two random, just normal guys are fist fighting in the, you know, 7-Eleven parking lot. That if we can learn how to get along with people, and learn how to, frankly, like be mindful about how we interact with others, that'll reduce a lot of social friction. It will eliminate a lot of confrontations that just don't need to exist. And then we can focus on the ones that truly are avoidable, you know, when you just happen to stumble in front of Michael Myers, you know, because you got unlucky. So that's the broad answer. Specific answer is just, and maybe, I don't know, maybe this answer isn't specific. I think it is. Habitually practice empathy, okay? And people associate empathy with touchy-feely, and it can be. Certainly, there's cool.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino.
You're listening to a podcast right now, driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own podcast is free and easy. Upload an episode and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads just like this. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start your new podcast for free today at RSS.com.
See, and there's hot empathy. Hot empathy is like, I'm feeling what you're feeling. You know, I'm watching a soap opera and I'm crying because she just got her heart broke, whatever it is. But there's also cool empathy where it's just like, okay, I'm going to put myself in this other person's position and I'm going to try to see what they're seeing, hear what they're hearing, and view the world as they would view it. And this is useful on a couple of fronts. One of them being, that at times that does cause me to be like, you know what? I want to get mad and yell at this person and be like, hey, look, man, maybe they're having a bad day. They're another human being just like me. So I'm just going to calm things down and be like, hey, sorry, buddy. Sorry about that. My bad. And, you know, hopefully they calm down and we both go our separate ways and we don't have a violent interaction in a public place. But also, and this goes back to same with home defense, put yourself in situations where you're like, okay, I'm going to the mall. When I get to the mall, if I were a human predator sitting in the mall parking lot waiting for a target to come along for me to victimize, what would I be looking for? Where would I want them to park? Where would I, and you don't have to make yourself crazy with this, but just literally, okay, when I pump gas, from the perspective of somebody who wants to rob me while I'm pumping gas or carjack me or just take my purse, like what would make it easier for them or harder for them to do that? And so empathy is a lot more than just feeling how people are feeling. So habitually practicing empathy and putting yourself in the position, the mindset of other people, frankly, will help you recognize ahead of time, a lot of times, you know, where there are vulnerable spots before you get to them and you find yourself painted into a corner, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that does. So what has been one of your biggest takeaways as a student of Force on Force?
What? There's a paradox with, and not just, I mean, this thing is like both in force on force and in real world violent encounters, there is a paradox that if you can wrap your mind around this, this is, you know, half the battle, we'll say, again, made up statistics. And that is to say that you need pre-planned responses to certain stimuli, right? That if right now, I don't know, bullets started flying through the window, you know, here in my house, sitting here in my chair and being like, huh, I should come up with a strategy for this. Like, no, I need to do something immediately. And so having immediate responses planned for various possible outcomes is essential. But you can't become so married to them. That's basically a life preserver to hang on to when you don't know what to do, to buy yourself some time to use your head. Because something I see in a lot of, I've experienced myself, and you know, certainly back in the day, and I see it in a lot of attendees, is I'll teach them, like, okay, first we're going to do this. If this happens, we'll do this. Then we'll do this. Then we'll do this. I'm like, okay, cool. Well, those steps, you know, step one, step two, step three, are to buy you time to let your brain kind of catch up to what's going on so you can make an informed decision, having bought 10 seconds to contemplate the situation. And so what I have learned about myself is that if I go into a scenario married to a specific course of action, we're like, okay, if this guy does this, I'm going to do this. Just luck and life says that he's not going to do that. And then all of a sudden when he does the other thing that I'm not prepared for, and I'm still like mentally kind of stuck on, well, like, no, he was supposed to do this. And so the biggest thing that I learned at Force on Force is having pre-planned responses is essential, but you've got to date them. You can't marry them. And so knowing when to stick to the plan and when to deviate from the plan, is the most important thing. And frankly, there's only one way to get better at that, and that's practice it.
Awesome.
And yeah.
Awesome. Well, so is there anything else that you would like to add either about your home defense class or about the Force on Force class before we wrap up?
No, that's all about those.
Okay. So tell me about what MAPS is.
Sure. So that is my mental agility preparation and planning skills class. This is my, frankly, my favorite class that I teach because I'm a nerd. However, it is probably the one that's like the least understood by kind of the general public. This class, and my concept for this class, this is not a shooting class. This is a 8-hour, you know, one day, you know, plus or minus an hour here or there, seminar, essentially, you know, typically done in a classroom setting that is a discussion presentation. We have some role-playing exercises that we do. You know, we make a day of it. It's a lot of fun. It's something you can do, especially like if it's super hot, you know, dead of summer, dead of winter, when people don't want to go outside and train, this is something that you can get and increase your skills. It is essentially my presentation on everything I've learned over the course of my life in special operations from, you know, 20 years of open enrollment attendance, in engaging in numerous violent encounters myself overseas. This is what I've learned about, like, how to be mentally agile, how to adequately prepare yourself, both from a mindset standpoint and from a skill standpoint, and the planning principles that will make you a more competent self-protector, self-preserver, and, you know, yourself and your loved ones. I mentioned during the home defense class that within special operations, like, one of the Army Special Forces strengths is specifically kind of analyzing the mission, whatever the mission might be, breaking down, like, okay, so to accomplish the mission, here are the things that need to happen. How do we accomplish those things, and working backwards? And rather than, you know, like my home defense class, like, okay, in home defense, here's how you do those things. In force on force, basically, hey, when you're out in public, here's the problems you're facing, here's the techniques you can employ, and how I, you know, and I basically teach people mentally how to deal with that specific context. MAPS is, frankly, if you took this class, then you could, you know, with deliberate thought and training experience, like, but you could figure out all the other contexts. This is here is a way of thinking about self-defense, thinking about risk management, thinking about contingency planning. Like, okay, in my life, what are the things, what are the risks that I have to mitigate? What are the contingencies that I need to have a plan for? This is, rather than teaching specific techniques, this is look, here's how I think about being hard to kill, being hard to surprise, And making myself and my family less vulnerable. Here's just a general philosophical approach, and you can take this template and apply it to your life and apply it to your context. And it's basically, rather than deep dive on like the opposition and deep dive on criminals or deep dive on techniques, this is a deep dive on yourself and how you think and how you behave, and what you can do to make yourself more mentally agile, more prepared, and, you know, develop better plans for whatever it is in your life that you think you might need to plan for.
So the term, and this is something that's really interesting to me. So the term mental agility implies that there is also mental rigidity, right? Because agility lends itself to being flexible, being, you know, able to kind of move with the flow, I guess. How would you, I guess, help someone identify where they are already on that spectrum? How rigid are you in your thinking versus how agile you already are? And how would you help someone assess that? Or is that something that you can assess?
Oh, no, it is certainly something you can assess. What's interesting is much like physical fitness, there can be a modal component to it as well, which, so like in physical fitness, a power lifter, like a professional power lifter is very mentally tough. Like you don't squat 1,000 pounds without being, and train to squat 1,000 pounds without being mentally tough. But if you take that same, and most power lifters just don't have a lot of like long range endurance. So if I suddenly take that power lifter that squats 1,000 pounds, and then ask him to run a marathon, that mental toughness isn't necessarily going to translate. So mental agility, there are certain people, like we all know the guy who, and I wish I were this guy that, you know, buddies are talking trash because they root for a different sports team. And there's that one guy who's always got the really witty comeback. And then, you know, me like 2.5 days later, I'm like, ah, you know, and I wish I'd thought of a thing. And so that's one kind of mental agility. That doesn't mean that dude's going to be great in a gunfight, right? So one, there is a modal aspect of it. But generally speaking, yeah, some people are more mentally agile than others. Some people are more mentally rigid than others. How can you assess that? I mean, how can you assess that in this context we're talking about? I would say that's very much where like force-on-force training, like we discussed earlier, can help you out. Because there are people, you know, just like the whole high responder, low responder thing. Some people tend to just like act before they've even really fully thought it out, which can be good and can be bad. Some people tend to, you know, deliberate too long when they should be taking action. And sometimes you have to put yourself in even fictional scenarios to figure that out. But the big thing with mental agility, as it relates to self-preservation, self-protection, is that if you talk to people who've been victims of crime, what you will often hear is like, you know, they saw the person coming towards them with the knife, but they like, oh, I can't believe this is happening to me. Or why are you doing this? Or, you know, like Tom Givens, famed instructor, you know, often references when he, as a peace officer, he would interview, you know, people who had been stabbed, people who had been shot. They were mentally rigid and that like they'd never been shot at or stabbed before, therefore they never would be. And then when like a dude was walking towards them with an axe or whatever, they couldn't adapt to the rapidly changing conditions. And I think the secret sauce of mental agility, though, is there's going to be a natural level. But one of the ways that you build mental agility is by introducing yourself to novel concepts, novel situations. Now, you can't really go out and like intentionally, well, I wouldn't advise going out and intentionally getting robbed over and over and over to, you know, to demystify that novel stimuli. On the other hand, literally just mental reps. Every time you read a news story about somebody getting robbed in an ATM, or you see a video of somebody getting robbed in an ATM, you can ask yourself, like, what would I have done in that situation? What was probably the right move? What was the wrong move? Like, were they, did they overreact? Did they underreact? And then think about that and like, okay, I'm going to the ATM. It's at night. It's kind of a bad part of town. Like if this happens, if that happens, what I'm going to do, that's how you build mental agility, by not starting from nothing, from a blank slate. As far as assessing it, I think it's probably two modes specific, because the person who's very mentally agile on a basketball court as a point guard, if you put him on ice skates and made him a hockey player, a lot of his mental agility would go out the window because he was having to think real hard about skating, which is a whole other discussion, which is why technical skill does matter, because knowing how to skate makes you a lot more mentally agile when you're on the ice.
That's probably very true. So you were talking about, kind of the basically the role your imagination plays, right? So you read about the scenario, or you're going to the ATM and you're thinking, hey, how would this play out? Or, and you know, what does good look like versus what does suboptimal look like? Is there a balance between, can you imagine it going too wrong? And can you kind of set yourself up for failure? What happens? Is there such a thing as only imagining it going too right? Is there a balance there? What would you say?
There's no definitive answer to that question. At the end of the day, there's a difference between like mental practice reps and contingency planning, because from a mental practice rep standpoint, like we don't want to picture ourselves missing a pistol shot, or like I would never want a basketball player to picture themselves missing the game-winning three-pointer, or a golfer to picture himself slicing it into the slicing it into the trees, because then you are literally practicing failure. Your brain doesn't know the difference between, real and imagine, and mental practice reps are very impactful. On the other hand, when it comes to contingency planning, it is very unlikely that ninjas are going to spring from my ceiling. I'm probably wasting my time on that one, right? But most people make one or two mistakes when it comes to, I guess, imagining calamity. Is either they don't at all, and not just calamity too. That's the thing, is that they're like, okay, if seven dudes in ski masks with body armor and AR-15s kicked in my front door, and it's like, okay, is that a thing that's ever happened in the state you live in ever? And if yes, how many times was it not gang and drug related warfare? So that's probably, I can probably put that the ninjas and and ski masks and AR-15s, I can probably put that on the back burner. So either people don't imagine anything at all, like they literally have never considered that somebody might rob them in their church parking lot. I'm coming out of church, nobody would ever rob me in the church parking lot. Like, that's still a parking lot, they're still in adjacent neighborhoods, so yeah, it could happen. Or they imagine wildly unrealistic stuff. Because certainly I want to ask myself, if I hear gunfire and I look around and I see a man with a gun, like, okay, is it possible he's a bad guy? Yes. Is it possible that he is a cop? Yes. Is it possible that he is another good guy like me who just happened to get his gun out before I did? And I need to like take a real pregnant pause before I shoot somebody who's not pointing a gun directly at me, because what if they're another good Samaritan trying to help? And thinking through those scenarios. So the thing is I don't think that there's a magic answer on how to not over or underthink it. It's more of a studying where you live, your environment, what kind of events are more likely to occur. Because I think most people are either just not thinking about it at all, or they're using action movies as their frame of reference instead of like the metro section of their local newspaper.
Yeah, no. And that's and the reason I kind of think about that is sometimes I think about you got your Debbie Downers who kind of think that everything that's possibly bad is going to happen is just going to happen. Or you've got on the other hand your people who kind of have almost like a hero complex. Like everything that's going to happen, it's just going to magically work out. Like, what do I have to say? I've got the shotgun by my bed and that's all I need. And that kind of speaks to what you were talking about, where they fail to think about how things can go wrong, but you don't want them to go down too far down that road and, like you said, devolve into ninjas.
Right.
So what is I do you think the most valuable takeaway from your maps class for attendees?
So the key to mental agility in the self-defense context is identifying reasonable risks. Risks that you may see. I don't even want to say likely to see. Reasonable risks that you may see. Determining realistic, practical ways to mitigate those risks, like making your preparations, like you know, buy a gun, learn to shoot the gun, get licensed to carry the gun if applicable in your state, and then carry the gun on a regular basis, carry pepper spray. Like, what problem are you trying to solve? Develop your methods for solving it, and then implement those and go live your life. This class, you know, it's 8 hours. We spend a lot of time talking about the way the human mind works, you know, self-image, subconscious, you know, all kinds of psychology and stuff. But it's all practical with one goal in mind: to make you better prepared so you can relax and enjoy your kids and watch the old couple at the park who've been married for 50 years and see the, you know, the little boy who's, you know, his dad's a hero and he's trying to get his dad's attention and he's doing something funny, you know, when you're at the grocery store or whatever. This is not a class to teach paranoia. It's just the opposite. I'm trying to help people figure out a way to say, okay, what are my priorities? What do I need to worry about? Okay, cool. Having worried about it, what am I going to do about it? All right, I now have these plans in place. I've made my preparations. And having done that, I'm ready to respond to those things if they occur. And I'm going to go to my son's softball game or, you know, whatever. And so, yeah, identify risks, mitigate the risks, and live your life. And that's what it's really all about.
I like it. Is there anything else you want to add about it before we wrap up?
Nope. I guess about it.
Awesome. So do you want to tell us what classes you have coming up?
Yeah. So just the rest of this calendar year, I'm going to be in Brookville, Ohio, October 21st. That day I will be teaching the home defense class. Then the following day, October 22nd, also in Brookville, Ohio, I'll be teaching my force on force adaptive skills training, which would be the force on force scenario stuff. So if you show up for that weekend, you'll be getting a little, here's what to do inside the home, here's what to do outside the home. Then the next couple weeks after that, I'll be in Mansfield, Ohio, teaching my mental agility preparation planning skills class. And that'll be November 3rd. Then that'll be a Friday. Then Saturday, November 4th, I will be also in Mansfield, Ohio, teaching once again my force on force adaptive skills training. December 2nd, I will be in Lincoln, Texas at Carl Rand's absolutely outstanding KR training facility down in Central Texas, about halfway between College Station and Austin. And I'll be doing mental agility preparation and planning skills there. And then December 3rd, which will be a Sunday, we'll be doing our fourth on force adaptive scenario training there. So I'll be in the Midwest in Ohio twice in October, November, and then in December, I'll be down in Texas. And, you know, dates, awesome. more dates coming up in 2024.
Absolutely.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
You're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own is free and easy. Upload an episode, and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and hundreds more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads like this, even with just 10 listeners a month. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start free at rss.com.